Chapter 13. Life Through a Lens. Over in Wigmore Street, at 11 a.m, Emma is lying on the brown couch for her second session with Harriet. Harriet is sat behind her with a pen in hand and a notebook on her lap. "Emma, today we're going to find out a bit more about you and your life," Harriet says. "What do you want to know?" "Let's start with something easy. I just want you to tell me about a typical day for you." "Okay, I get up at 6:30 a.m. I don't need an alarm, and as soon as I wake up, I get straight out of bed. I do a few stretches and drink a glass of hot water and lemon. I get the children up and dressed for school while Lily, our au pair, makes their breakfast and their packed lunch, which has to cover all of the food groups and be nutritionally balanced. I get to sit with them while they eat breakfast, and that's when I have my first coffee of the day. Always black and never any sugar. Strong Colombian beans, freshly ground. At exactly 7:45 a.m. I get their coats on and make sure everything they need is in their bags, especially their homework, which I help them with. It's really important that they're ready for the day. Lily drives them to school and I go to the gym. I start with Pilates on a Monday, spinning on a Tuesday, yoga on Wednesday, spinning again on Thursday, and bar on Friday. I don't go to the gym at the weekend, but I do an hour of yoga by myself at home. I shower and change there. Then I go home and I have my breakfast. I like to make sure I have it at the same time every day. I usually have scrambled eggs on a small piece of toast, gluten-free, not too much butter, and another coffee. I never have more than two coffees a day, though, and I can never have it in the evening as it keeps me awake. On Fridays, after breakfast, I meet up with some of the school mums for herbal tea at our favourite cafe. It's a way for me to catch up on what's happening.
"What is it you need to catch up with?" Harriet inquires.
"Well, I like to know how well my children are doing, and the best way is to ask the other mothers."
"What happens on the other days?"
"Well, I get on with my studies."
"What are you studying?"
"To be an interior designer. I've always been told I have a good eye for style. I do exactly 2 hours, or I did, until I started coming here twice a week. At lunchtime, I have a small salad and a kale smoothie in the summer, and a soup in the winter. No bread, no carbs. After lunch, I study for another hour and a half, and then generally I go for a run around the heath. That takes me exactly an hour. Once a month, I go horse riding. Then I come home and make sure the house is perfect for when the children get back. I get them sorted with supper, and then, while Lily baths them and gets them ready for bed, I prepare something for Miles and I to eat. He doesn't always come back early enough, so I often eat alone. But I know he has to work hard for his job, so I don't really mind. We've always tried to have a date night once a month and usually go to the theatre, ballet or the opera, and a light supper somewhere, although lately we don't seem to have managed that. Harriet nods and makes agreeable sounds, encouraging Emma to continue as she writes her notes. He's working towards a promotion, which is really important to him and us. When he doesn't come home of an evening, I tend to have long baths or read or listen to Radio 4. If Miles isn't around, I do tend to have a few glasses of wine of an evening, or a gin tonic, just a small one, or sometimes two, but never much more than that. Unless something has bothered me through the day. I mean, I find it helps to get me through the night. Occasionally I paint, mainly landscapes or horses. I never show anyone, though.
"And why is that?" Harriet asks.
"Oh, they're not good enough." Emma says this as if it's obvious. "I guess my life is all quite normal, really. You could almost say boring." She laughs self-consciously. "Is that the kind of thing you want to know?"
Harriet nods. "Well, yes. Now, I've noticed that you like routines, Emma, and to be disciplined. Would you say that was true?"
"Yes," she nods. "I do like things to be in order. I'm definitely not a spur-of-the-moment kind of person. I like to know where I am and where I'm supposed to be, at all times."
"And what about your relationship? You haven't said very much about how you spend your time with your husband."
"Well, if I'm honest, we don't get that much time together at the moment. But we're just like any normal couple with young children, trying to make our way in the world, both juggling many things.
The only thing that does concern me, and what I really wanted to talk about, is the lack of intimacy. For the last year or so, we've hardly been intimate at all. I worry that perhaps he isn't attracted to me anymore. I mean, I do my best to keep in shape, and I've worked really hard not to let myself go. So I can't really put my finger on it. There's nothing that's really gone wrong or changed. He just doesn't seem interested in sex anymore.
I see. Have you raised this with him? Has he said what he feels about it?
Well, I've tried to, but he always assures me that everything's fine. He says he loves me. He's just busy and too tired. He says this is normal, that lots of guys at work have the same issue. And once he's where he wants to be, it will be better. But I'm not convinced. And it really worries me. I mean,
I see. Well, Emma, Harriet says, cutting her off. That's a great start. But it's all we have time for today. Let's continue in the next session.
Emma really wanted to discuss her relationship with Miles, specifically the lack of sex, in more detail. But she dutifully stops talking immediately and makes her way to the reception to confirm her next appointment. Wow, she says to herself. Those hour sessions really seem to fly by. She leaves feeling a little perplexed and not a little dissatisfied. I'm sure it'll all be addressed in the next session, she tells herself, more confidently than she feels. Zoe arrives for her third session with Clara. She welcomes her in and she makes herself comfortable before the session begins.
How has your work been? Clara says. I have to say you seem brighter
and more present. Zoe nods and smiles. It's been going quite well. I still haven't heard from you-know-who, but I'm not freaking out about it anymore. And more to the point, I'm not blaming myself either. It is what it is.
Well, I'm really pleased to hear that. So what have you been up to?
And out of everything you've been doing, what do you think has been the most helpful? Zoe pauses. I think it's all been helpful. I've been doing a bit of yoga and meditating on and off. Not sure if I've been getting it right, but it seems to be helping anyway. And the journaling has been really good. At first, I have to be honest, I was a bit daunted. I had no idea what I was going to write, and I wasn't sure how it was going to help. But a week into it, and I'm actually really enjoying taking the time to write about what's going on. I've had a few really interesting insights as well. When things pop into my head now, especially negative thoughts, I just write them down. And then I can see just how ridiculous most of them are.
That's great. And just how it's meant to work.
Yeah, I'm definitely starting to feel better. I'm a lot calmer and certainly more focused. Mainly because I've been taking better care of myself. I've noticed that when the day starts well, the rest of the day follows suit.
Clara laughs gently. It certainly does.
And I've really noticed the link between my mental state and my behaviour. When I'm not stressing out over things, I'm able to make better decisions and more positive choices. And the best bit is that I'm observing more and reacting less.
Well, Clara says, that sounds really great, Zoe. Can I assume this has significantly reduced your anxiety?
It has, and it means I'm getting so much more done. Everyone at work is wondering what's got into me because I'm so much more organised. Even Mitch is looking at me strangely, especially when I get up early to do my yoga and meditation. He's used to me sleeping through the alarm and then running like a crazy person to get out the door. They both laugh at this.
Well, I'm really impressed by how hard you've been working and how diligent you are. Now, talking about the thoughts you've been writing down, have you noticed any patterns in them? Clara asks.
I have, actually. I realise I've always been a bit of a pleaser, going out of my way to get approval, mainly from the men in my life, and especially my dad. I mean, bless him, he did his best. But a lot of the time, he didn't really seem to be that interested in me, or Rick, my brother, for that matter. He was always a little too focused on Emma. She was his golden child, literally. She was blonde and gorgeous, and she could wrap him round her little finger. Rick and I could never quite live up to her. I was a bit mousy and tomboyish, and just got on with things. And Rick just got into trouble all the time. He just loved getting out of it, whenever he could, on whatever he could. He got caught smoking weed behind the bike sheds at school and was expelled. and the next school caught him selling booze to the underage kids before the school discos. To be honest, I think he was trying to get attention, just going about it in all the wrong ways. That fiasco led to another expulsion, and then he just dropped out. Mum was mortified by it all, and Dad was just livid. But Rick was more interested in his camera and taking pictures. Dad kept insisting that it wasn't going to help him live. He needed qualifications so he could get a proper job. It seemed the only time he did get Dad's attention was when he was yelling at him for some stupid thing he'd done. But Rick didn't care, or pretended he didn't anyway. He spent most of his time with his best mate, Gabe, who had a darkroom in his house. And the two of them would spend hours and hours working on the pictures they took, getting stoned and talking rubbish. And what about you? How did you manage to deal with things?
Well, I guess eventually I got into the getting out of it thing too. It was just drink with me, though. I tried getting stoned once and I hated it. It just felt like my eyelids had heavy weights on them and I couldn't keep them open. Seemed a complete waste of time. So it was just booze for me. Lots of it.
It seems as though the two of you had similar difficulties within the family unit. A shared sense of lack when it came to your father's attention and love. And your coping mechanisms were similar from the sound of it.
Zoe is silent for a time. She hadn't really seen that connection until now. I don't think I really appreciated how much my father's disinterest affected me. He was never cruel or particularly unkind, and I knew he loved me. He always said he was proud when I did well at school and got into university, but I always felt like I wasn't the girly girl he wanted me to be. Emma was all that and more, so it made me look even more awkward and swottish. And poor Rick, who couldn't ever get a thing right. Well, except with me. He and I did have the most amazing bond. It's not quite the same these days as I hardly ever see him, but I still love him to bits.
Tell me more about the two of you.
Ugh, where do I begin?
Why don't you go back to the earliest bits you can remember?
Okay. Well, when we were little, Rick and I were inseparable. He was the one I went to when I was happy, when I was sad, when I needed cheering up, or when I had a secret to tell. He always told me that we could do anything we wanted, and I believed him completely. I remember telling him when I was about 8 that I wanted to be a lawyer, and he told me to go for it, really encouraged me. The greatest thing about him was his sense of adventure and his ability to make almost anything fun. He was so cheeky and naughty that he got away with murder. We got away with murder when we were together, and I suppose in a funny way, he made me feel safe. After I told him I wanted to be a lawyer, we used to play act being in court. He was always the villain. We made up so many stories, it was hilarious. But I would always get him set free in the end. When I told my dad I wanted to be a lawyer, he laughed and said I'd do better as an air hostess. He said I'd get to see the world and, because I was pretty and liked helping people, it would be perfect for me. He said that being a lawyer wasn't very ladylike and that I should be more like Emma. I know he didn't mean to make me feel bad. He's just a bit old-fashioned, is all. But how did it make you feel when he said that? Well, it made me sad. I think that was the point when I stopped telling him about what I wanted. I stopped confiding in him. I couldn't really talk to Mum either, as she always told him everything and it would come back to me, and not in a good way. He would make jokes about things, like me ending up as an old spinster with a load of cats if I wasn't careful. So I know he meant well and didn't mean any real harm. It was just his way. But I guess it did upset me. I just didn't realise it at the time. Zoe pauses and has a sip of her water. She's a little choked up. Clara nods in understanding. I understand that must have been hard for you. So who did you confide in?
Mainly Rick. He became my champion. He said I'd make a brilliant lawyer and he'd do anything to help me make it happen. And he was true to his word. His passion for photography paid off. And he had a lucky break, which was a major turning point for him. He made a ton of money. And the first thing he did was give me the money for university. I didn't want to take it, but he insisted. I would really have struggled otherwise. And he said if he didn't give it to me to do something constructive with it, he'd just waste it. So I'm totally indebted to him. The only problem was that my father never got over the fact that it was Rick who'd helped me financially. In his old-fashioned way, he saw that as his job as a father. The even bigger problem was that he didn't actually have that kind of money, so he wouldn't have been able to help me even if he'd wanted to. It's been an unspoken bone of contention between them ever since. On top of everything, Rick has never wanted me to repay the money. He says I just need to help him if he ever ends up on the wrong side of the law.
which, looking at his lifestyle, is potentially quite likely.
And what about now? How do you two get on? Clara inquired.
Well, I don't really see a lot of Rick. He has a crazy schedule and is away a lot on trips. And I work crazy hours as well. I mean, his lifestyle is way more glamorous than mine. And he gets to hang out with all the beautiful people. But I do worry about him. He drinks too much and does too many drugs. He's still always high or drunk. And there's so many people around him that are a bad influence. Which I guess goes with the territory. At the barbecue, he seemed even more spun out of control than usual.
What about Rick and relationships? Clara asks.
Zoe draws a deep breath. He's a bit of a car crash as far as relationships go. He's had so many goals, but they just come and go. All beautiful, all youngish, and all wrong for him.
So from the sound of it, he's living a bit of a wild party lifestyle, suggests Clara.
Yep, and I don't think he's ever sober or gets enough sleep. Just working and partying. I mean, at least he does take his work seriously. Only trouble is that he can still party even when he's doing that. He's brilliant at it, which is why he's so sought after. But that free creative spirit does have its downsides.
What kind of photography does he do? Clara inquires.
Beautiful women, mainly. He's a knack of bringing out the essence of who they are on camera. A way of making people feel special and safe when he has a camera in his hand. He's incredibly kind and attentive, so people drop their guard. And he always captures something special. His break happened when he took a photo that went viral. He'd taken it one night at an event, and everyone just raved about it. Later, all the top magazines wanted him. It was one of that comic, Helen, which is a TV personality. You might have seen it.
Of course. She has her own TV show now, doesn't she?
I remember that first photo he took of her.
He ended up doing a shoot with her that went straight onto the cover of Vogue afterwards, didn't he?
Zoe nods. They were beautiful shots. Really unusual and intimate. Not the airbrushed kind of photo you usually see from celebrities. And after that, everyone wanted Patrick Walker to take their photo. And everyone else wanted to party with him. He's notorious for being wild and outrageous, but that's why they all love him. No one knows what crazy ideas or crazy stunts he'll come up with next. The crazier the better. And he's the master at doing crazy.
It sounds as though he may be a little addicted to adrenaline as well, as all the other stuff.
Yep, he so is. He'll do anything for kicks and attention.
Well, it sounds like a great way to not be present. Not be fully intimate with anyone.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that, but I think you're right. He never sits still, never wants to talk about anything serious. He's always the joker, Zoe says thoughtfully.
Sounds like he's created a powerful defence mechanism to stop him feeling things he doesn't want to. A bit like you have at times.
Yeah, I know, Zoe says. I wish there was something I could do to help him. He is such a lovely person,
even if he does drive me to distraction sometimes. Well, by healing you, you'll help all of them, Zoe, including Rick. As you change for the better, it will have a ripple effect.
Oh, well, that's really good news. Makes doing this work even more important.
Yes, but let's be really clear, Zoe. You are here to heal you. You are not in any way responsible for any of your family or their choices. They have free will, and what they choose to do with their lives is their prerogative.
Well, of course, says Zoe sheepishly, but some habits die hard.
Talking of habits, why don't we have a look at some of yours? So what are the main things you do to escape, to not be present?
Well, the overthinking zones me out. I have got better, but it does sneak up on me sometimes. I can find myself completely out of control, and my chattery mind has a force of its own.
It drives me bonkers at times. I procrastinate, and I'm really good at it.
But mine's probably the same, really.
Not the drugs, just the drink. I'm really good at drinking too much. If I'm happy, I drink. If I'm sad, if I'm worried, if I'm bored.
I don't think there's anything that I can't justify having a drink for. I've really tried to cut back, especially over these last few weeks. But I've been really surprised at how hard it's been. I didn't think I had a problem. I was convinced I could take it or leave it. But maybe it is a bit more of a worry than I thought.
Ah, yes. So why don't we have a look at that? Zoe, what about the rest of the family? What's their relationship with alcohol like?
Well, Dad used to be a big drinker. But now that he's a cabbie, he can't so much. He'll let his hair down and have a few on his days off. And Mum has a gin and tonic every night, and maybe a glass or two of wine with dinner.
but she's never been a big drinker.
And what about your sister?
Oh, to be honest, we don't see that much of each other. We do get on, but our lives are just so different. But from what I know, I think she is partial to a few glasses of wine every night too. I don't think I've ever seen her drunk, but that's because she's far too together for that. But she definitely does like a drink. But then everyone in my family does like a drink. It's always been there. I've never been to a family function where there wasn't a whole load of alcohol. It's just what people do, isn't it?
Not always, Zoe, no. So it seems that there is a bit of a pattern with people drinking in the family then. Drinking, in and of itself, is not an issue. It's only when it's used for the wrong reasons that it's a problem. When you use it to escape, not to enhance your experience. From what you've told me, there have been many occasions where you've used it in the wrong way. And I just want to make sure that you get to have a healthier relationship with it than you may currently have.
Okay, Zoe says, a little concerned by what might be coming. What do I have to do?
I'm going to get you to go within and get some answers. All the answers you need are already there. We just need to bring them to the surface. We'll just do a short closed eye process. Bit like a guided meditation, is that okay?
Zoe nods.
Good. So I want you to get comfortable in the chair. And when you're ready, you can just allow your eyes to close. Take a few deep breaths and let go of any tension. Just allow your body to relax. As Zoe listens to Clara's soothing voice, she feels herself slipping into a wonderful state of deep relaxation. She is still aware of Clara speaking in the background, but she feels safe and warm and calmer than she's felt in a very long time. It's as if all her negative internal chatter has stopped. She's completely immersed in the atmosphere of well-being that Clara is describing.
Zoe, I would like you now to imagine that you are in a very safe place. Everything is peaceful and tranquil. I'm going to invite your higher mind to illustrate to you what effect your drinking habit is really having on you. You can just be curious and wait to see what happens, knowing that you are safe, and you can share with me what's happening.
Zoe takes a very deep breath, and then the expression on her face changes. She begins to look a little uncomfortable.
What are you experiencing?
It's very strange. But it's as if I'm standing inside a very large glass bottle, like a giant wine bottle. The glass is tinted a shade of dark green. So when I look through it, everything outside looks really murky and unclear. I feel a bit trapped. It's like I don't know what's really going on outside in the world.
And what else are you aware of?
I'm aware of people outside the bottle, and it sounds like they're having a great time. I can't see properly, though. So in order to see what's going on, I have to climb up a flimsy ladder. When I get to the top, I'm able to lift myself out and get my head just over the lip. I can see a whole world of brightness outside. It's sharp and clear and smells fresh. From here, I can really tell that life in the bottle isn't great, but I can't get out. Every time I try to escape, the ladder gives way. I slip back down and end up at the bottom of the bottle again. And each time I try again, it gets harder and harder until I'm exhausted and I give up and don't bother trying anymore. It's like I settle for what I've got as it's easier. All I can think of is what's the point? What's the point of trying anymore? I may as well stay as I am. At least I'm safe and I know where I am.
Zoe, it's important for you to know that this time it's going to be different. I want you to think about some of the women you've helped to get out of terrible situations. The you that stands in court defending their rights, and the strength you bring to those moments. I want you to remember just how powerful you felt the last time you won a case.
Zoe takes a deep breath, and she stirs in her chair, sitting a little more upright, as she recalls the win just a few days ago, and the smiles on the faces of the team and the women she helped. She had felt invincible.
As you remember your strength, you will find that you now have more choice. You are in control now. So what needs to happen for you to get out of this bottle?
Zoe ponders and then says in a really determined voice, I have to really want it. I have to commit to it. And I have to see the drinking for what it is. I thought it was my saviour
and now I can see it's actually my jailer. I need to get out. I want out. I want my life back.
Good.
So what would you like to do to get yourself out of the bottle? Zoe, here in this space, you can do anything you like. Bring in any tools you need.
I think I need a stronger ladder.
Okay. So I want you to visualise the ladder you need. Once you have it, describe it to me.
Zoe laughs. Oh, this ladder is way stronger, way more solid. It can hold my weight and doesn't collapse when I get to the top.
And tell me what happens next.
I'm climbing out. Wow, I feel like I can breathe. I jump down and when I look back, it's as if a huge bottle has shrunk. Now, it's just normal bottle-sized, and I can happily throw it in the trash. I don't need it anymore. Oh my God, I feel so liberated.
And then what happens, Zoe? What happens next?
I'm able to join the people that were having a great time. Oh, it's my family and my friends. They were all calling for me, trying to get me to let go and not be stuck anymore, but I couldn't hear them.
And how do they respond when you join them?
They're really happy to see me, and me them. I look behind me and I can see Rick caught up in a bottle of his own. Only his is also full of white powder. His walls are totally opaque and he can't see any of us. I want to take him my ladder and help him get out. Can I do that?
You can use your ladder to climb the outside of his bottle and let him know you've escaped. Show him it's possible and there is another way. However, he needs to find his own ladder. He may not be ready yet. He may not even welcome a ladder or anything else. Plant a seed, Zoe, and then let him be responsible for his own choices. You cannot fix him, but you can send him love and lead by example. Be the best version of you and he may be inspired to follow you. But it's up to him. He has free will and he may decide to stay where he is. Zoe nods a little sadly. If you could put your head over the top of his bottle and speak to him, what would you like to say, Zoe?
I love you, Rick. I know you can find your way out if you want to. It's great out here. It really is.
Zoe sighs deeply and smiles. How does he respond? Clara asks.
He looks up and says he can see me. He can see the light. He says he's not ready to come out yet. But he's happy I showed him there is a way out. He knows I can't do it for him and he has to work it out for himself.
And how does that feel to hear him say that?
Oh my God, I feel like a ton weight has just lifted off me. I feel really free.
Happy tears roll down her face. Clara brings Zoe back to full waking consciousness. She looks a little stunned by what just happened.
But surely that was just my imagination. How is that going to work? She asks.
Why don't you just wait and see? Try not to question it or overthink it. Just carry on doing what you've been doing and we'll talk about it next time. Just be curious, Zoe. Your mind is more powerful than you think. Clara smiles.
Oh, we're talking about next time. I hope it's okay, but I won't be here next week. One of my big cases is finished and I've got nothing scheduled for about a week. So I've booked myself onto a retreat. It's in Egypt, near the Sinai. It's a Qigong and meditation workshop. I thought it might help. What do you think?
Clara smiles. It sounds like a wonderful idea. Have a fantastic time. Just make sure you keep filling in your journal and keep up everything that we've started, even while you're away. Having a conscious and disciplined routine is very important at this stage. I'm sure you'll have a wonderful time and I can't wait to hear all about it. Zoe leaves feeling lighter and so much better. She's finding these sessions very beneficial. She has no idea what the trip will have in store for her, but she has a feeling that it probably won't be all plain sailing. She just hopes she's ready for it.